Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome to Real Jam Radio. I'm Daniel LaRue, your host. So happy to have you with us for this episode. This came about because Arturo Galletti of Box Score Geeks and friend of the show talked to me earlier this summer about the idea of doing an over-under podcast. And once the numbers came out, we decided that'd be fun to do. So we got the numbers from the LVH Superbook at the Westgate Las Vegas Resort, as reported by Canis Hoopus. And that gave us a way to talk about all of the teams, you know, who did better, who did worse, how the numbers work. I'm not particularly a gambler, but I think that it's a fun exercise to do either way, and it gave us a way to talk about every team. So the way that it happened, because it was a long conversation, is it was recorded over two different weeks. So we did one on Sunday, October 5th, and one on Sunday, October 12th. And this is the first half, so it's Atlanta to Miami. But because a lot of things happened over that following week, including Durant's injury, Beal's injury, we and Arturo did some good research, we wanted to go back over those first 16 teams again, so there is a lightning round after the initial thing. And for those of you who got to this link or who can go to Real GM, I'm going to have timestamps for every team, so if there's one team that you want to hear, you can do that. And if you want to hear more, obviously, I'd love that. But it was such a fun conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Nice to be on.
This is the early walkthrough for us in terms of over-unders. And so what we're going to do is we're going to go through each team in alphabetical order by city, or by, you know, what they're called. And then so we're going to go through a little bit on each team, how the better or worse, and how the over-under fits in. Sound good?
That sounds very good.
Okay, so the first team is the Atlanta Hawks. Last season, the Atlanta Hawks won 38 games. Do you think they're better or worse than they were last year?
I think the Atlanta Hawks are a team that's very easy. They're better. I think they picked up some players in the draft and from free agency. I think the other thing is they were hurt last year. They were really banged up. They were rolling out some crazy rosters. There was a stretch, like a 12, 14-game stretch, where like I thought they weren't really even trying to make the playoffs. And they were terrible. And then all of a sudden they said, oh, we're going to make the playoffs. Oh, let's start playing again. They were much better than the record. I think they 38, I think they were more, I mean, honestly, truly, they were closer to 50 of their full strength. So I think this team is definitely better next.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both factors. I think not only were they a better team than their record last year, yeah, I'd say they're close to 50. I was thinking mid-40s. That's the number that was in my head because they were a really good team before Horford got knocked out. They were a solid team.
But you do remember there was a stretch when like the Knicks were starting to catch up, but they, like the Hawks weren't even trying. I think they lost them like 14 straight, and they were rolling out some like bad lineups. So there are stretches in the season that really, if you were looking at the Hawks, you have to just kind of just throw out. Because it was kind of like they were thinking that they weren't going to make the playoffs and they were tanking for a draft pick. And then they figured that they were still going to make the playoffs anyway. So, screw it. Let's just make it in. And I remember literally writing the team off and writing a ranking column saying, like, the Hawks aren't even trying.
Yeah, I think I remember that column. And the additions that they had are interesting because they're very different. So they added Thabo, who I think will help them. And they added Adrian Payne, Tavares, and Muscala. And I think they got deeper, which will help them in terms of regular season record. But I also think they improved on talent because they lost Louis Williams, but he missed most, if not all, of last year anyway, from what I recall.
Yeah, and we talked about this on another podcast, which is we like Muscala. And we think Pittman's decent. And obviously they're getting Horford back. So, they're better at, like, the key position. And it's not like there's dominant big men in that conference. And they're also it's an interesting in that team. That team is smartly coached. I mean, I think they did some good things in that Pacers series, and they did some good things across the board. And again, I do think they've done a really good job at getting talent from Europe into that team as well. So I like this team. I mean, I think that they're definitely. I think we're going to talk about the over-unders in a little bit, but they're certainly an opportunity.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I also think that what makes them compelling from a perspective, and we'll get into the over-under now, that their number is 40.5 wins, is that In a lot of ways, I would say that last season was their low water mark in terms of, you know, basically as much as could go wrong went wrong. They won 38 games. Granted, the East has gotten better in the middle and bottom.
But they threw something like a dozen games. I mean,
they
out and out threw these games. Like, you can go through, like, they were just, like, not even trying. So, I mean, they could have won 41 games easy last year. 42, I mean, like, and again, I think if we go by that 38 win total, I think this team, do you think this team is better or way better this year?
I think they're substantially better. I think that my instinct is mid-40s, so that's about a standard deviation off, about right?
Yeah, that's better. I actually think they're going to be closer to 50. I mean, I think that this is a team that, and again, we also talked about this in another podcast, which is I think the Hawks to win that division is an interesting, but because I do think they have, I mean, if they're healthy, I mean, I think they can totally do it. And I think even that, I mean, they've kept adding these guys around, like, in the deeper parts of the roster that are interesting, and I do think there's some real value there.
Yeah, I agree. And so, yeah, anything else on the Hawks?
I think you were at better, and I think you're thinking, like, 45. I'm thinking more like 48, but we both like the over on that.
Absolutely, yeah, 40.5. I think that's – we haven't gone all the way through it, obviously, yet, but I think that's going to be one of the stronger ones on the board.
Yeah, yeah, because even in the worst-case scenario, that team, like – was better than, like, could have won 41 games last year.
Speaking of worst-case scenarios, the next team is your Boston Celtics. Last year, the Celtics won 25 games. How do you think they are compared to last year?
Oh, God, man. I actually think they're worse, which is really an interesting thing to think, because I liked a couple of the guys that they let go, because I like Humphries. I thought Humphries was actually kind of useful for them last year. I mean, Rondo should be better, and I like Marcus Smart. He was actually really good in the NCAA. And James Young is interesting to say. I didn't love it. I was kind of upset that we didn't get Kyle Anderson or like somebody like Clint Capella, which were available. So I'm actually, you know what? I'm going to go same. But, you know, same is they were bad last year, right? So I'm going to go same, basically.
Yeah, I think same is a good way to put it. What's strange about the Celtics is that their starting lineup doesn't look like it changed a ton, but their depth changed substantially. They lost Bayless. They lost Chris Humphries. Then a bunch of other kind of weird guys, but then they added Evan Turner, who I don't like, but is probably a benefit for them, and then the drafted guys. I think that the other big question with them is, will Rondo play more for them this year than he did last year?
My biggest problem is they keep paying these guys who are like retreads too much money.
Oh, yeah.
They keep playing Jeff Green, and they do a decent job of like getting rid of the older parts of the roster and getting some assets, but then like, you know, you're paying Jeff Green, you're paying Evan Turner. That's not good. I mean, so it's like, it's almost, I was going to say there seems to be two minds in that organization, but I'm going to say actually, I know that there's two minds in that organization. I'm not even going to name them, but there do seem to be, there are two schools of thought in this team. And you can actually tell because it does seem a little bit schizophrenic in the things that they do. So I do think, they're a 25-win team last year. They might be a 25-win team this year. They still don't have a center. Which was, you know, I was hoping they were going to go out and get Omer Asik or something, but they never did that. So we're going to be submitted to Jared Solinger having to play center this year again.
Yeah, and that leads us into the over-under for them is 26.5. To me, that seems like it's actually a really good number. I think I would say it's more likely than not that they're a little bit under it, but I wouldn't feel comfortable putting any money on that.
My season preview for the Celtics last year was called the coin toss. This may be the second coin toss. Because, you know, I think that's a great number. I think if they want to win more than 26 games, they can. If they don't want to win more than 26 games, they can as well. So it's entirely up to the organization whether they make it. And honestly, because, I mean, if they play the right lineup and play at it the right way, they can do it, but they might just not want to. It might be a Sixer situation again. Yeah, I would say stay away.
Stay away, yeah. I think that's probably the best.
I think stay away. Stay away because you don't know what the hell they are.
Next up is Brooklyn. Brooklyn won 44 games last year. They were the sixth seed in the East. Do you think they're better or worse than last year?
Oh boy. It's entirely up to how healthy Brook Lopez is. I actually think that they had something in Plumlee. I think that they were forced to use... I mean, KT's still good defensively, but they were forced to use him in situations that they really shouldn't have been using him. So they had Kevin Garnett like being too... Like, if I could have Kevin Garnett play defense playing next to an offensive center like Brook Lopez, that would be much better than what they did last year. I think Joe Johnson showed up in better shape. So I actually kind of think that if I break everything down for this team, they're going to be about the same because I do think they lost some players, But they're getting Brook Lopez back, and they're also a year older. So it's, and they also lost Kidd, who I, everything to me kind of indicates that he was a decent coach. So I'm going to say they're about the same.
Yeah, I think about the same is right. I think they're a little bit worse. The other change that I would note that you didn't talk about, well, they lost Paul Pierce and really only replaced him with Bogdanovich, which is shaky. But
I like Kirilenko. I mean, if it,
oh yeah, if he's healthy.
I mean, if Pierce's minutes are going to AK-47, I think AK-47 has a shot to be healthier this year. So that could actually be a win for them. So this is why I say they're about the same, because they had really bad injury luck last year, and I think if they have some decent, so you get, if you get more Lopez, and Lopez was really good offensively, if you get more Lopez and you get more AK-47, then, and then KG's like healthy for at least parts of the season, and then you've got Plumlee developing, then yeah, that's why I said like some players will go down, some players will go up. They're about, I mean, I could see them being they'll be slightly better than last year, but I mean, I think it's, but they have to have some luck for that to happen, right?
Yeah, I see them having some downside risk just because they're an older team, and if things fall apart, they fall apart badly. The other one, I'm not sure how much it'll affect the regular season record, but it'll definitely be important, is the swap of Livingston and Jared Jack. I think that Jared Jack is a pretty meaningful downgrade because of the idea that if Deron Williams is hurt and misses time, and I think we all think he will at some point, especially with the surgery he had in the offseason, then I think that's a lot harder for that team to handle, and that might cost them a few games. And also, just, I don't trust their depth as much as last year because, as you said, they're getting older. They don't have Andre Blatch anymore. So, but the big question with them is, will Brook Lopez play? Because if Brook Lopez plays, that's a huge addition from last year.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. He's really good defensively. I think I have some thoughts about what I would do. So, like, if I were the Nets, I would be calling Bo Maxwell up. Right now, he's a really good European player. He's always been really good in Europe. And he's a little short, which is why he hasn't caught on in the NBA. But if you're looking at, like, Jared Jack as your fallback option, if Derek Williams gets hurt, then, yeah, I would really start thinking about, there's a couple guys in Europe that you can call that could actually help you. And the problem with this team is the fact that they don't really have a lot of options because they don't really have a lot of draft picks. So they have to kind of start getting creative at getting some talent on that team.
Yeah, definitely. And the other funny thing about Bo is that he's an American player. I mean, he's played overseas for a long time, but he played for the University of New Orleans. So so him coming back is a very different thing than, you know, bringing over, let's say, like Yasikevich or somebody like that, kind of a backup guard, because he's from here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the big hope for them is like Duran and Joe Johnson are healthy, but they haven't. I mean, Joe has actually been pretty good. It's a good sign that Joe Johnson actually showed up in much better shape this year. I think he's like 15 pounds lighter is what I heard. Duran's interesting. Again, if they have some luck, this could be a decent roster. I do think that, again, this is one of those teams, and I've said this for this team before, which is I think they'll be better. They're better in a short series than they are for a full season, right? And I think that's because they do have the depth issue creeping up. So this is why I think even with some luck, they're about the same.
So if they're about the same, their over-under is set at 41.5. How does that feel to you?
I think just because they're playing in the Atlantic, I think I would like the slight over on that team. Slight over. But I wouldn't be willing to put any risk on it. How's that feel to you?
That feels about right, because the other component of it, like, I like to think about, you know, where does a team potentially settle in, and then what would it take to put them on either side? And
I mean,
I think of them as, a low 40s team, but I could totally see them falling into the high 30s.
Gun to my head, we were talking about this. I mean, gun to my head, I do think they're going to be a 500 team, and they're going to be an over 500 team, but there's enough risk. I mean, I think there's like at least a 40% chance that, like, everything goes to hell and they wind up winning 35 games, right? So, I mean, you know what? I do think that the over is good because it's only 41 games, right? So it's not like it's a huge number. So we're saying that, like, they have to win 42 games in the Atlantic. And we saw last year, even with, like, I mean, literally, like, there's a point in the season where, like, the Nets were a dumpster fire. And even when they were a dumpster fire, I mean, they still managed to win 44 games. And they kind of gave away three games at the end of the year. I mean, do you disagree with me? But they gave away three games.
Yeah.
At least, just because they were just resting everybody, not even trying for the playoffs. They actually didn't want it. What is it? They wanted Toronto in the first round, so they kind of said, "Oh no, we're happy with the 50." So I think the over is a good number for Brooklyn, even though I would kind of stay away from it.
So then we'll move on to the Hornets. They're the newly christened Charlotte Hornets. They won 43 games last year. Surprising season. New coach Steve Clifford. Do you think they got better or worse?
This is a really rough team because I love the fact that they picked up Lance Stephenson. I thought Lance Stephenson was a great opportunity for a lot of teams to actually, you know, here's a guy who's really good and work playoff supporting teams. But when I've done the analysis on the roster, what I find is that, like, basically they're about the same, right? So they're about the same as last year because, I mean, losing McRoberts, you know, McRoberts was a good player. So they lost McRoberts, they gained Lance. They're a young team, so I would say that they're going to be better. They're not going to be way better. They're going to be better. And, again, I think just because of the fact that some of these guys are going to grow is going to be good. The biggest concern I have for this team is, this is a team that nobody can actually, like, they have problems making buckets, and I don't know that, like, putting Lance on a team where he has to be the guy taking all the shots is necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, my issue with them, I think that they're better on talent, but they have what I call the Portland problem, which is that basically everything went well for them last year. They played better defense than I expected. They got a great season from Al Jefferson. And the other problem with them is that they're incredibly top-heavy, which is what Portland is as well. So I think that if they stay healthy, if their main guys are there, I think that they're substantially better than last year. You know, I think that they're, you know, it's meaningful. It's not a full, like,
Yeah, where I think it's interesting is, like, if we think Gilchrist gets a little better, I mean, if Gilchrist makes a leap, then this is a really good team. So I think that's what I said. Like, I think there's enough guys in there. Like, you know, you got Kemba there. You got Lance. So it's young guys who can actually, like, get better. So I do think there's real potential here. So this is what I say. It's like, I like this team to get better. I don't like them to get way better, right? So I think I think that I'm in the – we talked about this. I'm in the high 40s for this team. But I'm not – I don't think they break 50.
So better but way better puts us in pretty closely in line with Vegas because they have Charlotte at 45.5 wins. I think that that's a really good number, but I would expect them to be a little bit better than that. How about you?
Yeah, I think they're a little bit better. I mean, I agree with that. I think that they're better than that. I mean, they're not much better, but they're better.
Next up is one of the best teams in the East. Chicago Bulls won 48 games last year. Obviously, they've had a lot of roster turnover. Do you think they're better or worse, and by how much?
So last year, the Bulls won 48 games, and so we expect... So they added, they lost some bad players, and they added some good players. Mirotic is a good player. I think we think that Powell is still a good player, but we don't know. He hasn't been that great the last couple of seasons in L.A. And then there's Derrick Rose. So the trick with this team is that Derrick Rose hasn't been Derrick Rose in about 3 years, right? So Derrick Rose, even like Derrick Rose last year was terrible when he played for the Bulls. And so you're adding that him in. I think this was... You know, I'm going to say this team is better, but they're not way better. So I actually think that, and we'll talk about this a little bit, I actually think they're worse than actually people think. I mean, there's a shot that this team is just about where Vegas has them, and they might be slightly below. The thing is that, like, you know, Thibodeau doesn't leave any wins on the table, right? And my worry with this team is that, like, if Derrick Rose is who he's been the last 2 or 3 years, as opposed to who he was, then, you know, we're really left with a slightly better version of the team that we had last year. And again, we're assuming that Powell is Powell, and Powell isn't the guy we saw in the Lakers last couple of seasons. So there's some real question marks on this team.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. The real challenge with the Bulls is that they got a lot better, but they got a lot better at a place that they were already good. It's the similar situation you and I talked about it a year ago in terms of Omer Asik and Dwight Howard, that, you know, you're not replacing some scrub's minutes with Dwight Howard's minutes, you're replacing Asik. And I think that what happened with the Bulls is they got some really good frontcourt players. I'm very high on Mirotic. I think he's a really good player. I think that he's a nice addition. But they got good minutes from power forwards and centers for the most part.
Well, I think
go ahead.
I think the biggest problem for them was, like, man, I would have spent some money at point guard. Some money or some draft picks at point guard. And as much as I know that like, you know, this is almost like a sin to question Derrick Rose, but, like, you know, Derrick Rose hasn't been able to stay on the court. And when he stayed on the court, he's been terrible. So, you know, it's the Brandon Roy thing. You shouldn't hold yourself hostage to a guy who might not be that guy. Bulls fans might hate me for hearing this, but, like, you know, maybe you could have moved to try to get somebody like Napier on the team, right? Miami went out and got him. So you could, like, the Bulls could have done a move where they got somebody like Napier on the team. right? Because, you know, you don't know. If Rose isn't that, you need some Rose insurance, right? You could have tried to get Isaiah Thomas on the team, right? So, and again, this isn't a dig on Rose. This is just saying, look, there's a 50% chance, I would say, to me, that Derrick Rose is never Derrick Rose again, right? And because what's the track record of guys, like, missing two seasons and then coming back and, like, being who they were?
Well, and not only that, but Derrick Rose is going to sit. He's not going to play 40 minutes a game, and when the only guy who backs him up is Kirk Heinrich, the other thing that I would have done is added a guy who can help initiate the offense from the guard position. A guy like Barbosa would have been useful there. Just somebody who, whether Rose is on the floor or he's not,
somebody
who can do something.
I like Agustin. I think people aren't like I have no problem with DJ Agustin. The other guy who they had on the team late, they actually had like some good guard play in the later half of the season.
They lost Augustine.
Oh, they lost.
He got overpaid by the Pistons.
Oh God! Then actually, that it's a real problem because right now the point guard rotation is Derrick Rose, Kirk Heinrich, and Aaron Brooks. Ooh, and Etuan Moore. Ooh, and then like Jimmy Butler's great defensively, but he's like really bad offensively. I've actually done the numbers on this. He's like historically good defensively. He's like maybe one of the best defenders in the league. Actually, not no may about that. He's one of the best defenders in the league. He's just terrible offensively. So, you know, I would have, as I said, I would have spent some draft. They got McDermott. McDermott was their pick. What did they draft McDermott at?
They drafted him at 11. So they drafted him right before Alfred Payton.
So here's some guys, and like Bull fans, you might hate me like at the end of the season for saying this, but you could have had. Oh, I forget the name of the guy who went for Memphis. I could look him up. Who showed up? Have you seen the guy who was the UCLA guard who showed up in shape for Memphis?
Jordan Adams.
They could have had Jordan Adams.
Jordan Adams.
You could have had Jordan Adams. You could have had Chavalas Napier. You could have had Kyle Anderson. And either one of these three players would have been. I actually think Kyle Anderson, who was the Spurs drafted at 30, is going to be awesome. I actually think that like either one of those three guys would have been awesome for the Bulls. And they're going to look back. They might look back at this as a real missed opportunity if Rose isn't healthy. Because if they had that one more player on the backcourt, then I would be like, no, man, this Bull team has to be considered a title favorite. I don't consider them a title favorite. Right now they have too many holes. If I were them, I would still kind of be looking to make a move to get another backcourt player. And really, that's because, as you said, they got really strong. So what do they do with Taj Gibson? Like, what the hell do you need Taj Gibson? If you've got the Mirotic and Pau Gasol, what do you need Taj Gibson for? Right, like go out and get somebody else, right? Because you need somebody on the you need a small, not a big, is what you need on this team right now.
To me, the question is, what do you need Pau Gasol for? I would keep Taj Gibson and try to see if towards the deadline you can move Pau.
Here's the thing: Pau hasn't been properly used. I mean, Pau is a better post scorer than anybody on that team, right? And he's a better post passer than anybody. Like, if you get Pau and Joakim Noah passing the ball in the center of the post, then wow, that's something. But you need, God, I wish they had Kyle Korver still on this team. Like, they need a shooter on this team, and they don't have him. Like, it's who's taking the three? Like, you've got Powell and you've got Joakim Noah, like, passing the ball and doing stuff in the post. Who is taking that first pass and making the three, right? There isn't really anybody on this team that can actually make a three or like, at least make a three with confidence. And that's the guy you need, which is why I said, like, you could have gotten somebody, like, or you could still go out and get somebody that could actually do that. And hey, I love Taj Gibson, but he's a bad fit for what you're trying to do with this team. Particularly if you've got Mirotic, what are you doing with him? I guess they're thinking Doug McDermott's the guy, but man, I don't know. I don't love it.
I liked what I saw to make pretty well set at the 3, the 4, and the 5, but does that matter if you're so not set at the 1? Because you can be derailed by one guy. The idea when you're building a team is that. And let's get to the over-under. The over-under for them is high. It's 55.5 wins.
I'm going to say under. I kind of feel the under on this team because, as I said, I don't trust Derrick Rose. I don't trust, like, my model hasn't trusted Derrick Rose for 3 years, and I haven't listened to it. And my model's been right on him every single time. It actually caused me the two-hoof smackdown for not, because I said, the model doesn't trust Derrick Rose to stay on the court. And when he's been on the court, he's been terrible. So it's one of those situations where you're like, you know, it's a bad beat, you know, and it's kind of a situation, you know, I understand the Bulls have all the sunk cost on him. He's a local boy, but really you should have a plan. If Derrick Rose is your plan A, you need to have a plan B.
Yeah, I agree completely. I have one more thing on the Bulls. The other potential that I see for them, depending on how the rest of the East is going to shake out, and obviously the next team we're going to talk about is a factor in this, I think that there's a very meaningful chance that towards the end of the season, they know they're not going to get first, but they'll be pretty well sealed in on second place in the East. And so I could see them losing a couple games, just not pushing as hard for like the last two or three games of the season. And that could push this 55 either way. Like, well, that would be another reason I'd be hesitant.
The reason, actually, I would go the other way. Like, Thibodeau has been shown, Thibodeau cares not for that. So it was Pop, yeah, definitely. But Thibodeau basically will try to win every single game that he can, and he will do whatever he can. So he doesn't give up games. That's not Thibodeau. So I actually think that the Cavs are more likely to do that than the Bulls. Because actually, I think on the over-under, I think the Bulls are overrated, and I think the Cavs are under. But we'll get to the Cavs in a second.
The Cavs last year, this is going to be the one that's going to be the most fun. The Cavs won 33 games last year. You can't say they got worse, because that would be just be wrong. So how much better are the Cavs?
I think the question is, did the Cavs get better, way better, or historically better? I actually think the Cavs got historically better. And what I mean by that is, like, I can't think of a situation where a team has added two top five players in their prime before. I mean, other than like the Celtics adding the big three, this is comparable to that. Like, LeBron and Kevin Love were the two best players at the position, like the best players at the position, and top five players in the league, and they got added to this roster. And again, these are not the only additions for the Cavs roster. The Cavs actually did a tremendous job of adding other talent around them. I mean, I think, like, you know, if we go through this, they added, you know, so LeBron, they added Sean Marion, they added Mike Miller. So basically they added LeBron, Sean Marion, Mike Miller at the three. They added Kevin Love at the four. They added Brendan Haywood at the two, who is underrated. I mean, like, Haywood didn't play much last year, but he's been an above average player for his entire career, right? So basically I think what they're hoping is, between Barajal and Haywood, can we get 3,000 minutes of the five, and then, like, you know, whatever, you know, maybe, like, get some Tristan Thompson playing the four and Kevin Love playing the five, too. I think they did a fantastic job building the roster. We haven't even gotten to the fact that Ray Allen might sign for them, which is another great move. You and I talked about this, which is, we are both literally drooling at what we think this team is going to be able to do, because the lineups this team could throw out are kind of crazy. The only problem I have with this roster is the Dion Waiters factor. And actually, it's interesting, because now they have James Jones, and if they get Ray Allen, I think kind of, and they got Dellavedova, I think Waiters is kind of redundant for this team. And I would be really thinking about, like, you know, what can I get for Waiters? I've been joking, like, maybe we can move him to, like, New York or something. But, you know, I think this is a way, way better team, and I think it's under, I mean, I think this team wins 60 games plus in a walk. I mean, there's no question. The closer I'm getting to the season, the more I'm going, like, man, this team is going to win 60 games.
Yeah, I'm in a very similar boat. The other thing I would mention is, not only Ray Allen potentially signing there, but they have to be the destination for any other people who get bought out. And we know that that always happens, that there are buyouts, because not only are they the clear-cut best team, but depending on how the roster shakes out, they might have some guard minutes available. Yeah, so it's not like they're sitting there, like, you're going to the Spurs, and you're going to the Spurs to not play. There's a possibility, if a good guard gets released, that they could get him, and or if they don't already have Ray Allen, and get some good minutes from him.
Yeah, and again, I think, again, you and I both like Matthew Dellavedova. We both like him. My only problem with that roster is the Dion Waiters factor, which is, I think Dion Waiters is like, it's like a poor man's Mario Chalmers, right? So he's the one thing, the one turd in the punch bowl. But I think, I mean, as I said, everything else on this team, like, man, I mean, adding Sean Marion and Mike Miller behind LeBron James, that's pretty amazing. You know, I like. I mean, I don't love Tristan Thompson as if he's your starting power forward or small forward on your team, then you're not winning a championship. But as the eighth guy on your team or the ninth guy on your team, man, that's pretty damn good.
And the other factor that I think is an issue for them is that they don't have a great rim protection outside of Varejao, but I also have faith that if they need to, that's the other spot that they could get a buyout guy.
Haywood's been good for his career. I think Varejao.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about fouling, because he's not going to be playing that many minutes.
It's like, as I said, all you need is 1,500 minutes from Varejao and 1,500 minutes from Haywood, and then you play Kevin Love at the five in spots where you're going, like, LeBron. You can get LeBron protecting the rim for spots. Like, you know, there's 1,000 minutes where you're playing Kevin Love at the five and LeBron at the four, And then, like, you have Sean Marion at the three. I think you're doing pretty well. Again, you can do that for stretches against certain. There are certain teams that don't have anything. If you put Marion, LeBron, and Love as your post as in the post, there are certain teams in the East that can't do anything with that, right? And there are certain teams in the West that can't do anything with that. I mean, there are going to be situations where you can't get away with it, but there's a lot of situations where you can.
Yeah, and even though I think teams are going to get up for playing them, I think they're so different and so strong offensively that I think they're going to have a lot of games that they're just up by 20 in the third quarter and are just going to be over. I think they're going to have a lot of those games, which also could help the rest of their major guys. I think they're going to have a lot of games that the starters don't need to play much, if at all, in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, like, surprise. I mean, Mike Miller was the line. Mike Miller was the only guy that played every game for the Memphis Grizzlies last year, which is kind of crazy, you know, given. And again, if they're going to be games where they're just like, you know, hey, you know, LeBron might play 10 minutes, and they just go Sean Marion and Mike Miller for the rest of the game. Say they're playing the Sixers. That's like, you don't need to play LeBron against the Sixers, right? Or you're playing, like, the Celtics, or you're playing the Bucks. I mean, they're going to get nights off. And even if they get nights off, I think that they're still going to crush. I mean, it's really hard for me to look at this team and not see 60 wins. I mean, what needs to happen for this team not to win 60 games?
LeBron or both of Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving are hurt at the same time. I think that's really what it is. It's going to be injuries at the high end that prevents it. And the over-under number on them is 58.5. I think we both expect them to blow through that, though obviously it's still a very high number.
Keep in mind, like, I think the last few seasons that LeBron was in Cleveland, I think there was the one season. Is this team better or worse than the team that won 68 games in Cleveland for LeBron with LeBron?
I think this is the best Cleveland surrounding talent he's ever had.
And he won 68 games one season in Cleveland, right? People forget this, but, like, they won 68. I mean, they had some really good, I mean, they just had some bad luck in the playoffs because they got some guys who got hurt. But, you know, we're talking about, you know, historically great teams in Cleveland. And this is the best team he's had. And, you know, I think 60 games is easy. I mean, they won 66 games in 2009, and I think this is, top to bottom, a better team than that team. Would you agree or disagree that this is better?
I think it's better, top to bottom. I would say so. And the other crazy thing is that these guys are all in their prime or before their prime. This isn't a situation – I mean, not Mike Miller and Sean Marion, obviously, but the key players on this team should not be succumbing to the ravages of aging. Maybe LeBron a little bit, because he definitely was down a little bit last year, but I think that his per minute – could get better, because I think they're not going to do what Miami did and overplay him so they can sit Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, I think one thing that's underrated, I keep saying this, is, like, you know, I don't think Kevin Love has ever been in a situation where he's not getting double teamed. And you, basically, like, he's going to get more open looks than he has at any point since, God, maybe when he was playing UCLA. I mean, that's kind of insane. And I think his numbers could be kind of crazy. And I think as long as Kyrie kind of learns to defer, and I think, I mean, again, I think there's no way that Kyrie thinks that he's the alpha dog over, like, LeBron and Kevin Love. And I think Kyrie's represented by LeBron's company. So I think he understands what the hierarchy is going to be. So I think the question is going to be, how far over 60 games does this team get? Not whether they hit 60. I think how far they're going to get over 60 is going to be the question.
Agreed. So we'll move on to Dallas. Dallas is a very interesting situation. Last season, they ended up squeezing into the eighth spot with 49 wins. Do you think they're better or worse than last year?
It's interesting. Dirk, by a lot of measures, is the best offensive player in the league. But here's the thing. At least last year, he was, like, the best offensive player in the league. He was, like, great at, like, hitting everything, basically. He wasn't great defensively. But I think one thing that's underrated is, I don't know how much of that was, I think Calderon was a real factor. I think Dirk has played really well when you put a really good point guard next to him, and I think Calderon is a really, really good point guard. And he's the kind of guy who makes everybody's numbers better, because, you know, you hear players talk about getting the ball in the right spot. So they basically traded offense for defense by going out and getting Tyson. And again, if you assume that Tyson's going to be healthy, and you know, again, keep in mind that, like, Tyson Chandler was playing on a team that had Andre Bargnani, Amari Stoudemire, and Carmelo Anthony next to him in the post, and it still was not the worst defensive team in the league. So he was doing a fantastic job defensively. I'm going to say that team stayed the same because they traded one thing for another, right? I do think they're going to be at about the same place where they were. I do think that they are better in a short... So I think they're going to be about the same, but they're going to be better in a short series. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I think that they're a tougher out in the playoffs. I think that that's definitely true. But I'm really scared of their point guard play because it's a massive test for Rick Carlisle because I've loved watching his teams, but he has never, to my knowledge, ever had a point guard rotation this shoddy.
Who's going to be their starting point guard? Who runs the point for this team?
I think it's Jameer. As crazy as that sounds,
I don't think it sounds that crazy. Is it Jameer or is it Devin Harris?
It's not. I don't think it's going to be Raymond Felton.
Is it going to be Monte?
No, I don't think Monte can. It might be Chandler Parsons. Just Chandler Parsons as the primary initiator, and then you have somebody else as the point guard. But I mean, I think you give a lot of the reins of the offense to Chandler Parsons and you play him with Devin Harris, and then you let Jameer run it when Chandler sits. That's how I would do it, but Carlisle's a far smarter basketball mind than I am. I'll trust him.
I had this team at like around 50 wins, like the roster last year. This is about 40. It's around 46 this year. But again, I do think that like Chandler took a hit because of the guys he was playing next to defensively. I think he's going to get better. I think Chandler, Dirk works. I mean, they're actually really good. When they were playing Dirk at center for game, he was actually really good. I think, again, this is an interesting roster. I do think they're in that no man's land. They do need to get to 50. I do think they get that. But again, I agree with you. Like going from Hassel Calderon to, like, you know, Jameer Nelson and Ray Felton is a real kind of downgrade. But again, going from, like, you know, the centers they had. Dalembert was actually good when he could stay on the court, right? That was the problem with Dalembert, was he wasn't really healthy. So he was serviceable. I mean, he was actually pretty good in that San Antonio series. Dalembert was actually quite good. But, I mean, Tyson is definitely an upgrade. But as I said, I don't know how durable this team is going to be during the season. Although Dallas does have a good track record of keeping players on the court, right? So I think, I mean, again, I think their philosophy is that they're going to try to get in, and they're going to try to be a tougher out in the playoffs. And I think they achieved that. So I think they're the same, but they're, as I said, slightly better in a short series.
So their over-under number is 49.5. I'll go first, and I actually think they're going to go under this because they have such huge injury risk. Because if any one of their top three guys, meaning Dirk, Tyson, and Parsons, goes out, I think that they don't have the depth at those specific positions to do it. That was the big change that happened with them that isn't talked about as much. They lost DeJuan Blair, who I think we both liked. Mm-hmm. They lost Vince Carter, and they lost Sean Marion. They added talent, but they didn't really add talent who can handle those guys being hurt.
And they lost Calderon, too. I mean, like, don't discount that. I mean, and again, but they also didn't have Brandon Wright. Brandon Wright is an underrated player. They didn't have him for, like, only, like, part of the... Like, he's... Like, at the post, Brandon Wright is great. And, like, the problem with Wright is you couldn't play Dirk and Brandon Wright together because they're both kind of more offense and defense. But, like, you can play Brandon Wright and Tyson Chandler, and you can play Dirk and Tyson Chandler, like, extended minutes. You can actually even play Dirk at the three and go Dirk, Brandon, and Tyson for extended periods of time. I think the whole key to this team is they need – if Tyson Chandler is healthy, this is a really good five-man roster. I just don't know – that I can trust Tyson Chandler to be healthy that much. So I'm going to go, man, I think 49 is the number for this team. So I'm actually going to go slightly under. But again, I would stay away. I could see if Tyson Chandler plays 2,800 minutes next year, then I see this team winning 51, 52 games.
Yeah, I think that I could definitely see them doing that. I can't see them winning more than low 50s. But at the next team is another one that you and I have talked about previously on the podcast, and it's a team I think both of us like, and that's Denver. Last season, Denver won 36 games in another one of those that I think you could argue was close to the worst case scenario for that team.
Yeah, I think Denver was actively tanking at periods in the season. They were in injury ward. They were actively tanking. They were still much better than the record, and I actually think this is probably a gimme. I could see this Denver team being a top four seed in the West. I mean, like,
wow.
Which is because, again, look at they went ahead and they put back together the team that was a top four seed in the West. And actually, I think you could argue that I think Kerr Farid, there's a likelihood that he's better this year. And I think they got Mozgov, who's, I mean, they got some players on this team. And if you say, hey, you know, Gallinari is going to come back and he's going to be healthy, then this could be a really good team. And I think that number, I mean, like, I think they're a way, way better team than they were last year.
Yeah, I think they're substantially better. And they did what I call the double, which is that they're not only are they better in terms of their personnel, but their team was better than they should have been last. Their team played worse than they were last year. So I think that they're going to upgrade in both of those ways. I think the Aflalo addition is huge for them. And as we just talked about with Dallas, they have the benefit of depth at the positions that I'm a little bit worried about with injuries and stuff. You know, what Ty Lawson being hurt screws them just like any other team with a guy like Ty Lawson. But Gary Harris was a nice pickup for them. Because I as long as Aflalo doesn't get hurt at the very beginning of the year, you have that. And you have the depth now at the forward spots with Wilson Chandler, some Danilo Gallinari, and obviously Kenneth Faried, that you can stay above water if one of them misses time.
And you got to,
and I think that that's a huge thing for them.
You got JaVale.
Oh, yeah. And Mozgov. I mean, if they stay healthy, I'm a big fan of Nurkic. I really like Nurkic.
Oh, Nurkic was so, really, really – I've got him as a 93 in Europe. He was really good in Europe. So, no, I mean, like, there's – I mean, again, I think this is a better version of a team that, like, won 50-plus games a few years back. And again, I think the West is tough. I do think that, like, people are sleeping on this team. This team is not even – like, I think Vegas is kind of – is very wrong on this team. Wrong on this team.
And so Vegas' number is 40.5. I'm expecting that you think they're going to blow past.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to destroy that number. I think they're way, way, way better than that number. I think, as I said, I think if I were setting the line for them, I would have probably set it at like 47.5 is where I would have put that team. I think because I mean, again, in stretches they're really good. I think that the problem is, like, you know, going by they tanked and they were really hurt, and I don't think that's something that's going to get replicated this year. I mean, I think if you look at their line, it's Lawson, Aflalo. You've got Gallinari or Chandler at the three. You've got Faried, and then you've got Mozgov at the five. That's pretty good. And then you've got JaVale coming off the bench. You got Danilo if you get anything from him. You like Gary Harris. We like what they've done. We think this is a team that can actually, like, I think, and throw in the Denver advantage, and I think this is a team that, you know, they could win 50 games. And, you know, again, like, the thing with Denver is you can win 50 games with a team that will win 45 games in another city, right?
Yeah, that's huge. And the other component of that, I've talked about how I like to think of where a team would be and why would they do worse and why would they do better. I think that even if you slated Denver like I have as a mid-40s team, there's far more reasons to see them going there or over than to see them going under, because they had a horrible health last year, so we know what that looks like. They have far better depth and far better talent this year. And it's unlikely that they're going to be as viciously tanking at the end of the season. When I look at them and I look at Phoenix, who won 12 more games last season, I don't see that big a discrepancy in terms of talent, if any discrepancy at all.
You know, I think the other thing is, I don't think this is a situation where, like, they're not going to play Faried the minutes. One of the problems they've had is they've kept Faried off the court. I don't think that happens this year, particularly after, I mean, like, you know, Coach K, basically, like, he was Coach K's guy. I mean, like, and generally Coach K, That does help. I do think that Faried's going to play as many minutes as they possibly can get him. I think so. I mean, again, I think this is a very, very interesting team, and they're very much slipping under the radar for everybody.
Agreed completely. The next team is Detroit. Detroit won 29 games last year. Another one of those worst case scenario situations, both from a coaching perspective and from a just overall horrible play perspective, and going 3-7 in their last 10 certainly didn't help. They had just a rough stretch to end the year, but they added one of the best coaches in the league in Stan Van Gundy, and they shifted around their talent a little bit. How much better do you think they're going to be?
Well, one thing that people, this is actually, I don't generally believe that coaches make a huge difference, but there are certain cases where they do make a difference. And Stan Van Gundy's teams, I've looked at like 20 years of data, and Stan Van Gundy's teams don't take bad shots. And what I mean by that is they if you look at what you like based on the shots taken, what you would expect from a regular player, Van Gundy's teams, like, I think I've got ratings for, like, his five Orlando seasons are all in the top 10 historically. And this Detroit team was a team that took a lot of bad shots last year. I think that they added some players that are good. They also, again, the coach is going to make a huge difference in the sense of, like, I think that just not taking bad shots, I'm looking at you, Josh Smith, is going to be worth probably at least 10 wins for this team. I mean, I that sounds like a silly number, but again, the record shows that, like, Van Gundy hates, like, mid-range shots. And I think With this roster in particular that's terrible taking mid-range shots, that's actually going to make a huge difference. So I do think that this team is going to be way better than they were last year.
I think so, too. And the other component of this that I like to think about for teams is who do they lose and who do they gain? And I'm not sure any team lost less in the players they lost than Detroit, because they lost Ducky, who was fine. Villanueva was nothing. Billups retired. He wasn't really anything last year. Peyton Siva didn't even really play. So while they didn't add a ton of talent on the court...
Wait a second. Augustine and Meeks were both underrated last year. I would actually argue that Augustine was better than Jennings last year, and Meeks was better than Bynum last year.
I would agree with both of those. But what I was getting to is, even if they aren't huge upgrades, they're still substantial upgrades with no loss.
And Spencer Dinwiddie, who's their draft pick, was really good. I have him as a 98 in the NCAA. So I said I actually think their backcourt got way better. And I think, again, I think Josh Smith, I think Van Gundy's going to put a shot collar on him, and I think he's going to like basically tase him anytime he takes a bad shot. And I think just that is going to be worth. I mean, man, Josh Smith like took some of the worst shots in the league. Like he was like measurably like the worst. The shots he took were he took the worst possible shots of anybody in the league.
Yeah, and I also think they'll be playing him less at small forward, which could lead to less temptation. Though obviously Stan Van Gundy will take out the temptation anyway with the crack of a whip.
I don't know that Josh Smith is going to be. I suspect that he might not be long for this team. Because again, they also got Caron Butler, who actually again he was another one who was actually kind of under and Caron Butler does everything that Josh Smith does, but he's a better shooter, right? So he might be a little older, but he does all the defensive stuff, but it's a better shooter. So I don't know that Josh Smith is necessarily the long term plan for Detroit.
I would say that one of Stan's goals probably is and definitely should be to rehabilitate his value in the first quarter to first half of the season and see if you can get an asset. And that asset, the nice thing about the Pistons is, other than center, that you can move them for anything, and that's benefit. And so you talk about the teams that are reticent to trade big for small. They're going to be trading small for bigger, not obviously a center big. But if you're getting a 2 for him, you're getting a 1 for him, you're getting a 3 for him, as long as it's a piece that you want to have for the next 3 years, that's better than anything they have right now.
Yeah, but you can kind of look at their roster and go, like, you know, like Stan kind of put in the backup plan already. So, like, what's the backup plan for Brandon Jennings, DJ Augustine? What's the backup plan for, like, he's got two guys. He got Jody Meeks and Spencer Dinwiddie at the shooting guard. What's the backup plan for Josh Smith, Caron Butler? You know, and then I think he's pretty set with Greg Monroe and Drummond, even though, like, yeah, Hashim Tabeet, what is he doing there, you know? So I think that it's really interesting that this is starting to look a bit like how he constructed those Orlando teams where he had some depth and he had some kind of plan B. So I think that this is a team that, like, it's gonna. I mean, Detroit's gonna have a really hard time, like, not winning half of their games. I think any Stan Van team is gonna have a hard time not winning half their games.
And if you think they're gonna win half their games, their over under is 36.5. I have a pretty strong feeling about what that means.
I think they're over. I think they're easy over, particularly since they're playing in the East. I think it's a no brainer. I think the question would be, like, if you ask me whether they make the playoffs. That's a tougher question. I think they're going to be in that bottom half, but I think they're definitely a playoff team. I think they underachieved massively last year. I think their coach, I mean, I think I don't know if you're a Mo Cheeks fan. I'm a Mo Cheeks fan as a player. I'm not a Mo Cheeks fan as a coach. So I think that the upgraded coach was significant for this team. And again, I think upgraded roster.
I think it's the whole package for them. And going from a team that did a lot of wholesale changes to a team that did a lot less, the Golden State Warriors last year won 51 games. Do you think they're better or worse?
Oh, boy. This is a rough question. I think that this team is the same, is my feeling with the Golden State Warriors. I think, because again, I like Livingston, right, for example. So I think Livingston is a good piece that they added. I like Aaron Kraft, but I still have the same concerns I did about their health and about their depth. I don't believe in Harrison Barnes. I don't know that Klay Thompson is necessarily the answer. I think they had a chance to get really better, but they didn't take it, right? So I think they're the same, and being the same in the West gets you nothing.
Yeah, I think that's pretty spot on. Their backcourt depth did get better, and that's a substantial thing because Stephen Curry last year, when the team was out, they were a disaster area. I think that will be a little bit better now, which is good. Because Barbosa helps that, obviously, Sean Livingston does.
But
they also upgraded a coach, which I think is a substantial impact.
True. But if I told you that this team got two wins worse and missed the playoffs, would that surprise you?
Not in the slightest, even if they were healthy. I mean, the Warriors are a good team if healthy, but if either Curry or Bogut misses any extended time, it's going to be a lot of trouble because they didn't, especially at center, because they didn't add anybody. They kept Festus Ezeli, who's hurt again, and then they have Kuzmic, who is just not particularly good at basketball right now. He might eventually get there. And the big question for me with them is, what will they do with Draymond Green? I think Draymond Green is their second best forward behind, obviously, Iguodala, who I think is a wonderful player. But where do they want to, what do they want to do with him? Do they want to play him? Do they want to use him to close out games? Do they want to use him to anchor the second unit? You know, you can do a lot of different things with him, and Jackson used him very poorly. We'll have to see if Kerr does any better.
Well, I mean, again, it's the point. It's like, you know, and I hate to keep harping on this, but they could have moved. They could have gotten Kevin Love on this lineup. They could move Harrison Barnes. They it would probably make more sense. Yeah, they probably could have they would have needed to go out and get it too, but you know, I think there's a world where they could have gotten Lance and Kevin Love. Right? So what if the cost of getting Lance and Kevin Love was Klay Thompson and Klay Thompson and Harrison Barnes and David Lee, right? Why not try to see if you can get that? I mean, I think if they're five, which is Curry, Klay Thompson, Iguodala, David Lee, and Andrew Bogut can hang with anybody. The problem is, like, I don't know that you can count on those five guys to be there when they need them, right? So I think they can hang, but I think, for example, like, if they get in the series with Oklahoma or San Antonio, I think both those teams can get them, and they've shown they can actually get them and outclass them. And I think they had a shot at being the best team in the NBA and didn't take it. Right, and you know, I get where they say, oh, we can't give up Clay, but I think you could have gotten something to replace Clay. And I think So they overvalued their guy, and that's a problem. And again, I think they're about the same team they were last year, and it's all down to health for them. And I agree with you that they got better at coach, but the problem is, I think the teams in front of them also got better. I don't think if I look at them and I look at the teams who were in front of them in the West, I think every team in front of them in the West like did a better job at improving their team in the offseason than they did.
Yeah, and when you're talking about the idea of coaches, it's not like the teams other than Oklahoma City in front of them have slouches there. I mean, the Warriors finished sixth. I mean, maybe I'm not a huge fan, as you aren't either, with Kevin McHale, but it's not like they got Stan Van Gundy. They got somebody who's a clear asset. I mean, and they were clearly motivated last year with Mark Jackson. The thing I want to ask you is, do you have any estimates in terms of if they, let's say they had traded Clay and Lee for Love and Kevin Martin, for how the Warriors would have looked then in terms of wins?
I don't have that in front of me, but I can give you an estimate. There were 60 wins, and I've got that roster about the same. I've got them at, like, my thing is saying 58 if they're exactly the same, but again, with some changes. I think they were, I would have had them at the 63-64 number is where I would have had them. So I think,
do you know how depressing that is for me?
But again, here's the thing. It's like, if you upgrade David Lee for Kevin Love, and then I think I don't think there's a market measurable difference between Klay Thompson and Kevin Martin. I think Kevin Martin's actually, like, again, I think Kevin Martin's slightly worse probably at shooting. But, I mean, he could actually, like, if you put him on a team with, like, open shooters, I think he would have been fine. And then you do the upgrade with Kevin Love, and then you try to move to get somebody else. I think they could have gotten to a place where they were great. I think they're just good, and just good doesn't get you anywhere in the West.
And the other component with Kevin Martin is that you're playing him with Andre Iguodala, who's one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, and Martin has the size to guard threes, so as long as you let Stephen Curry do his job, which he's fine with doing, then you can hide Kevin Martin when you need to, and that's not a problem. And it's just so frustrating because it was just sitting right there. But we don't need to harp on that. But their over-under total from Vegas is 50.5. How does that make you feel?
Basically, Vegas is saying they're the same team. They were a 51-win team last year. God, I'm going to say I want to say under, but just slightly under. I think 50 wins is the number for this team. And I think that I would stay away. But because, again, I could see a situation where they have perfect health and they win 58, 59 games. But I don't think that's likely, right? So I think that they're going to have some issues. And I think they're going to be – and, again, they have a new coach. So I think 50 is the right number. And Vegas is saying, like me, Vegas is saying, yeah, they're the same team they were last year.
I would say that if you're a Warriors fan, don't bet the over, because if they miss it and then they probably are missing the playoffs, that's just going to crush your spirit.
If you're a Warriors fan, bet the under and be happy when you lose. You're either going to lose and be happy, or you're going to win. You're either going to lose and be happy or win and be happy because you made some money.
Exactly. And move on to another team that's in the same bit of scrap of everything else, and that's the Houston Rockets. Last season, Houston won 54 games. Did they get better? They get worse? They stay about the same?
I'm gonna throw it to you. What do you think?
I think that the Parsons for Ariza part of their summer was largely a wash. I think that Parsons is overrated. Ariza is a little bit underrated. I also think he makes more sense with their team.
They needed a veteran steadying presence, and I think Trevor Ariza is going to be a good fit that way. Yeah.
But losing Omer is a huge thing for them. Lynn is all right, and I think, obviously they gave up first, so that changes it a little bit. But they have to stay healthy, because I like Terrence Jones fine, and I love Clint Capella, but I don't think he's ready yet. I think that what they did over the offseason is they increased their variance. I could see, if everything works for them, I could see them blowing up. I see them as a better playoff team now, assuming health. But at the same time, it's so much easier now with the lack of depth, because they lost to Sheik and Lynn without really replacing them. I could see them falling off and doing that. So I think they're about the same, but the variance part of it scares the living daylights out of me.
Well, you know who I was reading, it might be the backup for Dwight this year?
No, I'm interested.
They were saying Joey Dorsey might be the backup for Dwight.
Okay, that scares me even more.
Well, Dorsey's actually been he's been good. He's short, but he's been good in Europe. I mean, again, this is for stretches. I mean, I'm assuming, I think they're thinking that, like, I think they're plan A, plan B for Dwight. So it's Dwight, then I think Capella and Dorsey would be their plan B, right? And I think it's not a, I like the pickups they made. They did, the guys they picked up were really good in Europe. So, decent in the playoffs. I like Troy Daniels. I think that, I think they did a good job. I think, again, I like Ariza more than Chandler than Parsons for this team. I think that overall, I think this is a better team. And again, the noise that I'm hearing that, like, Howard wasn't really healthy and that the Lakers pushed him too hard and he wasn't fully himself, is good noise. I think this is they were already a better team. Like, again, this is a team was more talented than the record last year. Anybody who watched them stumble through national TV games, I think it was a national TV game against the Bulls where they looked like they were hungover, and they may have been hungover. I think this is a team that's actually better than their record. I think everything has always been about them maturing. I think this will be a better team than they were last year just because they're older, and I think they added some pieces that make sense. I agree with you that they kind of increased the barriers, but again, I don't think that Omer wasn't great for them last year, and he was adding to the maturity problem and the kind of bad locker room problem. So I do think that this team is actually I think this team is way undervalued this year. I think this team is better than they were last year. And they're easily better than they were last year. Just because, again, I think just the general age thing is going to help them. And again, everybody they picked up I like. I mean, I even like Jeff Adrian, right? So I think they did a – Jeff Adrian was actually decent in limited minutes for Milwaukee. So, again, I think they did what they needed to do to improve. And I think with young teams, you always expect them to get better year to year. And the Rockets weren't built to win now. The Rockets were built to win over a few years. And I don't think last year wasn't their peak. And I think they're going to be better this year.
Yeah, I can definitely see that argument. And that if you think they're going to be better this year, then their over-under is 49.5, which would be a four. They could still do that, finishing four games worse than they did last year.
Oh,
so,
no, that's one of the easiest. That's one of the to me. That's one of the easiest over unders that there is on the board. I mean, what do you think the likelihood of the Rockets winning less than that amount of games next year?
I'd say it's about 1 in 3, which is probably substantially higher than you, because I could see it, especially now, like Patrick Beverley getting hurt would be a far bigger thing. Basically, now any one of their top of the starters getting hurt is a much bigger deal for extended periods of time, unless the guys you like from Europe come on.
Yeah, I think, again, so let's say Patrick Beverley goes down, then you just play Harden at the one and, like, and then, like, have, like, one of the backups twos kind of come up, right? They've got Jason Terry on there and a couple other guys. I mean, they can swing without him for a while. I mean, they have Harden kind of is more of a one sometimes than he looks, and then you switch him back and forth. I do think that, like, the bigger risk is Dwight. I mean, I think the bigger – you hit it, which is without Dwight, it becomes a little bit of more of a run-and-gun team, and they don't have that great defensive presence or the backup that they had in Omer. But, you know, I like the over on them. I like their division odds again. I liked them last year. I like them again this year because – and we'll talk about it when we get to the Spurs. The Spurs are always a risk for, like, you know, giving away five – like, Bob might just say, I'm fine with being the three seed.
Yeah, he might. I'm lower on them than you are, and I still think there's a 2/3 chance that they win the bets. That's pretty good. I mean, you're not going to get better than that most of the time.
I think that.
And
what do you think? So let's put it another way. What are their odds of winning 60 plus?
Oof, 60 plus. 60 is a lot. I would say maybe about the same, actually. Maybe about 1 in 3.
Yeah, because I think they have. There's nothing. If that roster won 60 games at some point, you wouldn't be surprised. The problem is, like...
No, absolutely agree.
The problem is, like, are they... And again, the scuttlebutt that you hear about this team, which is, like, you know, they're just not mature, right? So it's like, you know, they're out clubbing and they're out going to strip clubs. And, you know, there's stories about, you know, Harden going out to, like, smoking bars before the Portland playoff series. So, I mean, like, you know, if this team kind of gets in their head to actually, you know, play hard and, like, you know, show up every game, then, yeah, I mean, this is a really talented roster, and at some point they're going to put it together. And I think, you know, I think 49, if this team, like, failed to win 50 games, then McHale not only needs to get fired, he basically, like, shouldn't ever get a job as a coach again, ever.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a fair assertion. Now we're changing gears, going to the Indiana Pacers, team that won 56 games last year with the Paul George injury, with Lance Stephenson going somewhere. The question isn't, are they better or are they worse? The question is, how much worse are they?
I think they're way worse. I think more of the question is probably, like, are they going to be trying this year? You know, I think this team kind of, this is a smartly coached team, and they kind of understand that if they want to win games, they have to slow it down and play, like, ugly ball. And try to win by, like, you know, minimizing the variability, which is kind of slowing, which is like the anti-Philly plan, which is play the slowest pace possible and, like, turn it into a rock fight. And I think that, I mean, they have the coaching for it. I don't know that they want to win this year. And what I mean by that is, like, I think it might be worth their while to kind of just, you know what, let's just write off the season and try to get a decent draft pick and maybe get another player to come in cheaply. For this roster. Again, they're also kind of on a small market, so I don't know. I mean, I think they're worse. They're definitely worse. Could I see their coach and that roster go 500 if they really wanted to? Maybe. But I don't know that they really want to. What are your thoughts on that?
I think they should tank, but I don't think they will. I think that the big question for them is how bad will their offense be? I think their offense is going to be really atrocious because when your best offensive player, other than Roy Hibbert, other than David West, obviously, like George Hill is going to be asked to do a lot offensively. George Hill is not a good offensive player, at least in my eyes. You could see him differently, but
he's okay, but he's not. Yeah, no. Right?
He doesn't initiate the offense. You know, if he's your linchpin, then you're not going to be doing very well. And the guys that they added to replace the guys who left are not logical fits to take on that kind of responsibility.
Their starting lineup right now, at least projected by RotoWorld, is George Hill, Rodney Stuckey, Solomon Hill, David West, and Roy Hibbert. I don't know what part of that, like, makes you think playoff team. There's nothing in that five that makes me think playoff team. Only
Frank Vogel and David West.
Yeah, those are the only two things because, as I said, if they want to, I mean, I think they can basically, like, punch their way to, like, a 500 season. But, man, I don't know that it's in the best interest to do that, right? So I would almost kind of go, like, screw it. Let's play a fast pace, and let's just write this one off. Because they really do need, even if they had their fully healthy squad, they would probably need another player. I mean, even if they had Paul George, I would still think this is a rough season for them.
Yeah, I would think so too. I would put them in the playoffs still if they had Paul George because not only is he a really good player, but they didn't really replace him. But yeah, I think this will be a great test for if Vogel is actually a good coach because he's going to have to do a lot more with a lot less and a lot with pieces that make a lot less sense together. But their number is 32.5 wins, which is pretty awful if you want a comparison for what that is. Cleveland, with their train wreck of a season, finished with 33 wins.
Yeah, but I mean, Cleveland was trying for the entire season. They were actively trying. They were actively moving to get players to actually win. And it turned out well for them. My numbers have them without George. Assuming George plays, doesn't play a single play. I've got him at 31 right now. That's the number I'm kind of seeing for my preliminary projection. Christ, I mean, I think I would go under for this team. And I honestly, because I honestly think that, like, it makes... I think that if, like Indiana, if you're listening, just don't even try. You shouldn't even try this season. I think I would be looking to maybe move Rip Hibbert and maybe get some pieces, maybe get some more assets, because it doesn't really make any sense for you to. I mean, you're not going to be able. It's like if you make the playoff, like Cleveland or Chicago is going to destroy you in round one, just destroy you. It's like it's not even going to be close. Just you're better off not even trying.
Yeah, I'm really on board with that, and I feel bad for them in a way because they've had such great success, and they've done it in the true small market way of cultivating their talent and making a really smart signing with David West. I think that was well done by them, but at certain points you just have to accept the hand that you've been dealt and just kind of run with it and understand that if they come back closer to 100% next season, if they can add a lottery pick and hit on that lottery pick, they'll be pretty decent. So that's how I would do it. But what I'm guessing would happen with me if I was betting this is I would be sitting there and go, oh, I'd be really scared to bet the under. And then 20 games into the season, I'd be so pissed at myself that I didn't.
Yeah, because
I think that's how it would go.
They were also terrible in the second half of last season. Just downright terrible. They were terrible in the second half of last season. They were terrible in the playoffs. So if we go by the terrible team, if you take the terrible team that they were and you subtract two all-star players, then, man, I mean, if they were playing 500 ball in the second half of the season. So you take a 500 team and subtract two all-star players. The problem is, like, it might be one of those situations like Tom Thibodeau where, like, you know, they're going to play hard every night and a bunch of the teams in the East suck, right? So this is why that 32 number is there, right? So it might just come down to, hey, Frank Vogel's really good and a lot of the teams in the East don't care. Right, so this is why I would say that maybe you stay away from it and get mad, or just play the flyer on like the under for this team.
Yeah, I think that's pretty spot on. Next team is a more fun team this season, and that's the LA Clippers, who won 57 games last year, and obviously the high watermark for their franchise.
Do you think
I would say ever?
Do you think this team is better or worse?
I think they're better. I think their biggest weakness was front court depth, and their front court depth got substantially better.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, when you can go out and, like, add, like, I mean, again, they added Spence. They added Jordan Farmer, who was actually really good last year for the Lakers. Like, hey, all these guys that are Lakers, like, keep leaving the Lakers and going to the Clippers. That's kind of sad. And Farmer was actually pretty good for the Lakers last year. You know, they added Farmer. I think you're going to get a healthy Redick, which you really didn't get. Like, it's underrated, but they didn't get Redick, and Redick was actually quite good for them. He wasn't healthy last year. You added and Spencer Hawes was a tremendously good three-point shooter last year. I'm doing this thing with, like, B-ball breakdown where, like, we're ranking him. Like, Hawes was, like, clearly the best big man shooter that you had. So you added, he was actually decent at the five, too. So, as you're saying, they added front court depth, they added back court depth. They're a better team. I mean, again, if you can get... Again, the biggest worry I would have for them is can Chris Paul stay healthy? But if you get everybody back and with the guys they added, this is a better team than they were last year. And it's kind of silly because, like, they were close to being the best team in the league in terms of regular season wins. And I would argue that basically they got hosed by the refs against the Thunder. They really should have made the Western Conference Finals. That was, like, one of the ugliest refereed playoff series I ever saw. But again, understood, and they also kind of upgraded owners as well. So, like, you can't be underrated the fact that, like, they're not owned by Donald Sterling anymore. They actually have a rich and kind of likable owner now.
Yeah, not only do they have a rich and likable owner, they don't have a ton of flexibility this season. But the other thing, we talked about Chris Paul being healthy. Last season, Chris Paul missed 20 games. J.J. Redick only played in 35. So when you're talking about that all they have to do, because we'll get to their over-under right now, their over-under is 55.5, so they can do worse than last season,
yeah, if Chris Paul,
and win the bet.
If Chris Paul plays 70 games and J.J. Redick plays 50, then they're already a better team, and this is without, like, talking about the fact that they upgraded, you know, and, like, you know, Glenn Davis is still on the roster, but I don't know that Glenn Davis is going to get any real time on this team. And they, man, it's hard for me not to think that this is a better team than they were last season. I really think, I mean, I think they're clearly better. It's how much better. I mean, like, this is a team that I could see. Could you see this team winning 64 games?
That's pretty high, but I could see it. You know, it's a possibility. Remember that nobody in the West, though obviously the Spurs let off the gas pedal, nobody in the West won more than 62.
But you remember,
so 64 is.
If you remember, like, when the Clippers were fully healthy and like knocking on all cylinders, they were, like, in the last couple seasons, they've been, like, at their, like, everybody's healthy, everybody's here, they've been basically blowing people out of the building, right? So it's this is a team that, like, you know, this is a team that doesn't suffer bad teams. Like I don't think, like, the Bucks aren't beating this team, right? The Knicks aren't beating this team, right? Like, and I don't think the Knicks are going to be bad necessarily, but I don't think the Knicks are, like, their teams are just have no shot against this team. If this team, it's particularly now that they have more depth, wow.
Yeah, and the other huge component of it is that, like we talked about with Cleveland, I think they're going to knock a lot of teams out early, and that will allow them to get their starters more rest, even in games that they need to win.
Yeah, but
and that's a huge shift for a team like the. That's a huge benefit, because if you can give Chris Paul 20 minutes and a win, that's a whole lot better than giving him 35.
Yeah, but the backs, even the backs on this team are great. I mean, like that.
Yeah.
That's the side that they're starting to look a bit like the Spurs. Were like, yeah, no, I think the second unit for this team might actually make the play. The second unit on this team might make the playoffs in the East. Like, what the second unit, like, let's go two on the depth chart for this team is Jordan Farmar, Jamal Crawford, Chris Douglas Roberts, Big Baby.
You either play Hawes and Udo together or Hawes and Big Baby. Either way, that's not horrible. I don't think they make the playoffs in the East, but they're definitely fighting for it.
Yeah, they're in contention for the playoffs. It's not like the Spurs where, yeah, no, they might actually get a top four seed. But this is kind of a good, much better than it was. And so, I mean, I think we both agree that this is better than the. I mean, there's no way to look at this roster and say they're worse.
And when you can still finish one game worse and still do it, I think that says all we need to about the quality of that bet.
So what would be your number for the Clippers?
If I had to put a number to them, I'd put it at 60.
I think they get 62, and they're the number one seed overall. That's my take on this team, because I think that, and again, I think Doc's going to play that. They're going to do whatever they can to get the one seed and get home court. I think it's important to them to have home court, and hopefully maybe not have the whole refereeing debacle that they had last year. I mean, the one thing is, I wish they would change their name. They should just change the name, LA Stars. It's what the old AVA team used to be called. It's much better than Clippers. Clippers make sense if you play in San Diego, not that much in Los Angeles.
Yeah, there's nothing tying them to that name. They can even keep the same colors if they want to. I'm not saying they have to, but they can if they want. And, yeah, I think that there's a lot of baggage there. I'm from them in the last couple of years, so they can easily move away from that.
They could call themselves the Los Angeles Windows or something.
Speaking of a team that has all the name cachet they need but actually needs to get better on the court, the Los Angeles Lakers won 27 games last year. Are they better or worse?
Oh, man, that's a rough question. You know, God, I would honestly have to say I think this team is better than they were last year. Yeah, because I think that Nash will play more than he did last year. He can't play less. I think Lin is an upgrade. I think you're going to get some Kobe coming back. I think that, they already lost Nick Young. I'm kind of thinking that Randall is going to be good, but they also got Boozer. It's, you know, I'm looking through it. I'm trying, you know what? They're the same. They're basically the same. They might be more fun, but I think they're basically the same.
I think they got better, but if I was running the organization, they would have gotten worse. I think that it was a very silly thing to do all these rentals. Though, obviously, if you get Jeremy Lin for a first-round pick, I'm never going to knock that because you got a first-round pick out of it.
But here's the thing. If it's Nash Lin, if you can get Nash Lin, Kobe, Randall, and Jordan Hill, right, that's your five. That's not a bad five, right? That's.
It's not good, but it's not
well.
Bad.
I mean,
it's not,
again,
it's not Sixers
well.
It
depends on what Steve Nash and what Kobe Bryant you get, right? So, and again, that's the issue. It's like if you get like half of like if you get like a throwback Steve Nash season, or at least a kind of throwback, like a Jason Kidd on the Knicks season, or so more like Jason Kidd's on the Mavs. Like the problem is like you're probably gonna get is a Jason Kidd on the Knicks season. Where he was good for a while, then it, like he died basically, and he like I think Jason Kidd didn't make a shot in the playoffs, or something like that. Like so, it's That's the problem. So ideally, I'd have Lynn at the one and like Nash at the two, and then Bryant at the three. That would be my ideal use of that roster. And then like Randall at the four and Jordan Hill at the five. I think that gives you kind of above average players in all five positions. The problem is like after you get out of that, like everybody else on that roster is crap. And I don't trust any of those guys to stay healthy for the entire series. Particularly now that like it looks like the Lakers training staff is terrible. Like they can't, like there's a subtle dig thrown. Somebody was throwing this, and like apparently like Phil was throwing subtle digs at their training staff too. And they haven't been able to keep anybody on the court.
Yeah, they haven't been able to keep anybody on the court, and their depth is not super strong because, you know, they have guys, but they don't have quality. I don't even know really who their backup center is. I guess it's Ed Davis, which is I actually like Ed Davis more than most.
I like Ed Davis. I think again, I don't think there's the problem isn't there. The problem is like let's look at the power forward. It's Carlos Boozer and Ryan Kelly. Ooh. And Nick Young is down.
No, and Julius Randle, who I like. I like Julius Randle a lot.
No, I like Randle. I'm assuming Randle's going to be the Randle should be the one guy on that team. Again, the problem, I think that this is not a roster that's taking you anywhere. And that's why I say I think they're about the same. I could see them being slightly better. I've actually said that I think this could be a team that's sneaky fun on League Pass. Because particularly like if you've got Nash and Lynn, kind of, if that's your backcourt, and you got maybe Bryant there, I think this could be a really fun team to watch, right? I don't think they win a lot of games, but I think they could be really fun to watch.
Fun to watch might be a little bit strong, but I think when they're healthy, they'll be interesting at the very least.
You're not into Nash and Lynn?
I'm loosely into it. I just think that their defense is going to be atrocious.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's part of... And they don't have D'Antoni as their coach anymore.
That's what makes it fun. Like, the Sixers were fun to watch for certain periods of the season. Because you knew...
The first quarter.
Yeah, you were going to get, like, a high-scoring, like, crazy game. So, I mean, like, it's the same thing. I think there's a real shot that this is, like a really good... Like, a good offense with terrible defense, which makes for, like, 120 games. So they could be a fun League Pass game. And then, like, Kobe's going for 50 every night. No, I think it actually works.
Okay, so their number's 31.5. What do you think?
Oh, God. I would begrudgingly say under.
Yeah, I would say so, too, because while they have nice point guard depth now, if Kobe or Randall...
That team is not going to tank. I mean, that front office is not going to tank. But they can't.
It's not like they're going to get guys getting cut saying, oh, I really have to play on this 30-win Laker team.
If that team wanted to win 18 games, they could, but I think they're going to try, right? So I think that I would go slightly under, but slightly. I don't think they're going to be. They're going to compete, is what I'm saying. They're not going to give up games. They're going to compete.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I'm kind of leaning a little bit towards the over, but I think I would never bet it. Because they have a lot of downside risk, but they're more than a 30-win team on talent.
Yeah, again, assuming they're healthy. I mean, like I've got them anywhere from 19 to 33 is where I've got them because like there's a lot of variability on that roster. I'm like because they could, you know, again, who's going to be healthy, who's going to be there? So like 20 to 33 wins. I think Vegas is right. I think under is strong is a higher possibility than over for this team.
Next up are the Memphis Grizzlies. They won an even 50 games last year, finished with the 7th seed. Do you think they're better, worse, or about the same?
Well, the Grizzlies had a lot of health problems last year. I think the issue. I really liked their draft. I liked Jordan Adams. I liked Hancock. I liked Jarnell Stokes. I think they're all really good players. I don't know how that rotation shakes out. I worry that Mark and Zach are not necessarily going to be able to stay healthy. With that said, I'm going to say that this team, you know, I was initially leaning towards, like, worse, but I'm going to say they're about the same. Because even though I think that there's risk in the guys they brought back, I do think they did a really good job at, like drafting. So I do think that, like, on the balance, it'll be about the same.
This is the reason why I like talking about separating out talent and performance, because I think that on talent, they're about the same. I think that they lost Mike Miller. They added Vince Carter,
yeah.
Jordan Adams. Those guys are going to be really useful for them. They added Jarnell Stokes, who I really like a lot. I think that he will give them more than Ed Davis if they play him. I'm not sure either one of them really mattered that much. But the huge part of Memphis is, not only everybody talks about how they lost a lot of Marc Gasol because Marc Gasol missed 23 games, which is big. Tony Allen missed a bunch of games too. Tony Allen missed more than 20. I mean, I think that.
Yeah, but I think the problem is like I think that's a thing for that team. I think that like Mark and Zach and Tony You know, I don't think that you can count on them to be like really healthy. I think that's my concern for this team. I think this is a team that like that is fragile, and I think this is a team that's why I say like really this is why I say they if I could say they have perfect health. I think they got better, but I don't think they're going to have perfect health. Even Conley doesn't stay on the court that much.
I think you made a right point about perfect health, but they didn't have perfect health at all last year, and they still won 50. I think the big question with them is Conley, because he's the only guy I don't think they have a clear replacement for. I like Benno, I don't like Benno.
I like Nick. I like Nick Kalefis.
He's all right.
He's decent.
Yeah, but so they're over-under, this is why I have strong feelings on it, it's 48.5. So it's lower than what their win total was last year. I think... I wouldn't feel super happy about it because of how stacked the West is, but I feel pretty confident that they're going
to
do better than that.
So my range on this team right now is 40 to 50 is my range for this team. So given that my range for this team is – actually, it's 41 to 51. So I would say under because it's saying that most of the time they're falling just like below. I think it's not that far. I think – again, if you're not Adams is a beast, then this is completely changes. And he might be a beast, right? But I would say that slight under is my feeling. So somebody has to lose the wins in the West. And I think Memphis is a strong candidate for kind of taking a little bit of a step back. Because I'm saying that the Mavericks are saying the same. I'm saying that the Nuggets are better. I think the Memphis takes a step back.
Yeah, I think they're in a similar boat to Dallas that I think that it, you know, the question is going to be kind of on luck and how the people that we haven't gotten to yet, the teams that were below them, how hard they push up against them.
Yeah, but who has the track record of keeping their older players healthy? I mean, it's like I don't know that even though hey they got a full healthy season out of Mike Miller last year, so maybe they do have a good track record of keeping players healthy. So I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like somebody has to take the step back, and I feel Memphis is a strong candidate for it. So I'm looking at that 48 and going like, I think, you know, I also think, you know, we'll talk about New Orleans, but I think New Orleans is stronger. So I think those wins are coming at like the expense of Memphis is my take.
Okay. So the team is the team that ended up losing in the NBA Finals last year, and they lost a lot more after the NBA Finals, the Miami Heat. Again, the question is not, I think with them, we're going to have an interesting conversation about how much worse, but it might not be as much as some people think.
I think Miami actually had, other than LeBron, they had a great offseason in the sense that, like, I think they did what they could in the draft. I think they did what they could in free agency. They got some good players. The problem is they lost LeBron, and, you know, the Miami folks don't want to hear it now, but, you know, LeBron is the best player. You know, he's arguably the best player alive. And he's one of the greatest players of all time. And so, you know, you won 54 games. How much worse are you without LeBron? And so what do you think about the Heat right now?
I think that the Heat are going to have a little bit bigger of an offshoot because they used LeBron so much as a crutch last season. They're another team that is hurt a lot by point guards that aren't great at running an offense. And so they were able to do things with LeBron that Luol Deng can't do. So while I think that the margin between Deng and LeBron might be a little tighter in some ways, I mean, obviously it's still a gulf. It's obviously still large. I think that the difference in winning games when it gets down to the margin will actually be larger. As you said, I think that in terms of the 2014-15 season, I think the Heat did an excellent job rebounding after LeBron left. I do worry about the long-term ramifications of it because they signed Chris Bosh for way too long. I think that was misguided contract.
I think we've talked about it in other podcasts, which is I think that given the fact that like the cap's going to explode, then it's not that bad because it'll end up becoming something like the equivalent of a $10 million deal now, and there aren't that many great centers, and he does do some things well. I do think that this is closer to the Heat and Raptors team before they got LeBron, right? So I think that... I think they're obviously worse. I think that it'll be interesting when we talk about the over-unders for this team. You know, I've got them right now in close to the 500 mark, right? That's where I see them. Whereas I think, again, the issue is I like the guys they drafted. I really like and signed. I like Napier. I like Cam Birch. So they do have some upside. I do think if Napier and Birch or either one of those is a good player, then you could see this team kind of be in the hunt. But they do need to hit on one of those guys.
Yeah, I think they fell into the soup, meaning that there are a bunch of teams that are at about the same level, and some of them are going to rise and some of them are going to fall. And I don't have a ton of confidence in terms of which way they're going to go, just that they're in that mix. And Vegas pretty much agrees with that because their number is 44 or 43 and a half wins. So 44 wins would do it. And for reference, the Brooklyn Nets won 44 games last year.
I would be, and as I said, I'm a 41-42 is where I'm seeing them. I would have the under on them, but I would stay the hell away because, again, if Dwayne Wade, top five player, shows up, right, and plays 3,000 minutes, then, yeah, no, they win 50 games. But I don't know that that guy exists anymore, right? So I would say that the majority of the time, the Heat don't hit the 43.
Agreed. And the other, we talked about when with Indiana that Frank Vogel had a major test and he has a lot of hype as being a great coach. I think Spoelstra has a huge challenge too because he has to totally change the identity of his team because this was a LeBron team and now they don't have LeBron. So they have plenty of talent, but he's going to have to make a system that works with a different group out there. And I think it's going to take some time. And if they're going to soft pedal Dwayne Wade again, which I fully expect them to do, I feel like they're going to leave some games on the table and they're going to lose some games that they would otherwise win. And that's going to be a lot harder to justify, though I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. I'm saying it's going to be harder when you're fighting for a playoff spot than when you're still settling in at the top.
Correct.
So that's the end of the original recording of part one, but as I said at the beginning, when we recorded for week two, Arturo and I did a lightning round because of what happened over the course of the week, and also Arturo had developed more projections, he'd run more simulations, so we wanted to talk about all the teams again. So this is a quick, about 10-minute run through a lightning round of the 16 teams a week later.
So I'm going to explain just a tiny little bit. So what I've done is I've got seven models running at this point, and I've done a bunch of simulations. And what I'll say is typically what I do is I take like a quick vote. So if, like, say, for example, we talk about the Hawks right now, five of my models think they go over, two of my models think they go under. So that's, you know, that's a not a strong over, but it's a good over bet. I actually think the best for the Hawks is the division odds for them is still the best. But that's a quick example. So, you know, we can kind of go through the teams very quickly. Everything, so Boston, Brooklyn, Charlotte, Chicago, Cleveland, and Dallas are all under. I think the Cleveland one I'll explain in that, like, as much as the model likes, the models like Kevin Love and LeBron James, they don't like a lot of the other folks on that team. They worry about Dion Waiters. They worry about the depth. I do think if they get Ray and a couple other things break their way, they could definitely be better. The other thing is, I do think that team is gonna. They're way better. They're predicted as way better than everybody else in the conference. So there might become a point where basically they're just kind of like they don't care for the last 10 games of the season. So that's why like it looks at that and goes, you know, 58.5 is a little too high for that Cleveland team. The Bulls under is a function of like, well, you know, when your plan A and plan B is Derrick Rose, your plan A and your plan B is Derrick Rose, right? And that makes any simulation kind of queasy. And then Powell hasn't been very good the last few years. Would you agree to that? That like Powell just really hasn't been that good the last few years?
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So
especially, yeah, it's been shaky.
Yeah. If you were, and I said this, if Mirotic was the one who was getting the minutes and Powell was coming off the bench and they'd actually gone out and gotten some, or like kept DJ Augustine or gotten somebody to back up Rose, then yeah, I'd be a lot better. Like if they had Napier, for example, I feel a lot better about this team. I don't, you know, I do think that like they're going to be there, but they're not. I don't think that number that Vegas put up, 55.5, is way too high. So,
but doesn't that make sense with Vegas's goal, though? Because I'm guessing people are pretty bullish on them, and so then that leads to people betting it evenly?
The smart money should be on the Bulls under. It really should because, you know, hey, Derrick Rose, you know? You know, again, it doesn't mean I don't think they'll be good. I mean, I think they'll be the probable two seed in the East, but I don't trust the health and the depth of that roster. So I think the next one we got is, I mentioned Dallas. Dallas, everybody kind of likes Dallas. I'm more like, well, you know, they lost some key pieces. And, you know, as much as I like what they did, I do kind of think that they're going to be a better playoff team than they're going to be a regular season team. I think the first, like, consensus over pick, which is the Nuggets, all the models like the Nuggets to go over. This team put the band back together. They play at altitude. There's a lot to like. They're 40.5. They won 38 games with, like, you know, they weren't even trying for half the season. And this is a markedly better team than it was last year. I mean, would you agree that the Nuggets are better this year than they were last year?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that I would say is probably one of the safest over bets on the board. Detroit, which Vegas has a 36.5, all the models like the under. I'm kind of, you know, this is one of those cases where I disagree with my models. I do think that I like what Van Gundy's going to bring to the table. I do think that he's going to move some players around. I see him as like a 41-win team. Does that sound reasonable to you?
Yeah, it sounds reasonable. The other factor to consider with them is that they can make a roster move, which I think would make them better. And also, they're a team that is strangely okay with injury right now because of their weird depth. So they're a team that, you know, if Josh Smith gets hurt, if Monroe gets hurt, they have guys that play the same positions.
Josh Smith isn't playing the full season for Detroit. That's not happening. Just look at the guy. I think Van Gundy literally brought in four guys to back him up, right? So basically that team is built for it's built with an exit strategy for Josh Smith. He should be renting, not buying right now. I think the next one we talked about what was the Golden State. I still like the over on Golden State. I think it's 50.5. I think that team goes over. I like what they did in terms of depth with OKC slipping back. I like that even more. So I do think they're pretty. That's pretty, like, 50.5 is pretty good. I also think that Kerr is a better coach than Mark Jackson we talked about before. So that's good. I think the Rockets 49.5. That's another sure over for all the models, and I agree with that one. I think that team's going to be better. I think one surprising one is Indiana's the over, and all the stat guys, this one's 6-1, but all the stat guys I talked to are agree, all the numbers, all the models are putting the Indiana at the over. Now, they're 32.5. When I say they're putting at the over, we're looking at somewhere in the order of 30 to 40 wins is the average that are coming out. And the trick with Indiana is there's a real shot that they might give up the season after 30 games. Right, so it's buyer beware. So yes, they can win more than 32.5 games, but it's going to be an issue of whether or not they want to win more than 32.5 games. Would you agree with that one?
Yeah, I would. I just don't see them as a team that has tanking in their system. But if they get off to a rough start, they might not have another choice.
They own all the draft picks though, and kind of, you know, it does. As much as we don't like tanking, us and the Wages of Win, we don't like tanking, but a lot of them don't. I actually, in this situation where you basically have your guys off the season, that you're not winning the title and you own your own draft picks, then there's real value to them kind of, not caring whether they win or not. And if that's the case, then it's more 25. But there is a world where the over kind of works. Particularly if that number is 32.5 now, it slipped to 30. Then it would be a different story. So I think we had the Clippers. All the models think that the 55.5 for the Clippers is dead on. The Lakers, all the models like the over for the Lakers. Again, the Lakers are also another fascinating team because I do think there's a world where they blow it up. And I was kind of saying this, but what if Kobe's back but the rest of the team sucks, right? So, you know, could you see Kobe wanting out of the Lakers?
No, I think he's there. I just can't see a circumstance where he does that. That's not a part of his image. It would have to be very, very below the radar.
He did it before.
He did it before,
He loudly called for his way out of town. I mean,
yeah, but that was before he was Mr. Laker. That was while he was establishing himself and all that. I think it would be very different now. I also think that the Lakers as an organization are committed to him in the way that I think they would turn down trades that would make them better, even if he approved of them, to keep him.
Yeah, I think there's, as I said, I think there's a world where, and we'll get to, there's a particular team that I think is, going to play in every single trade scenario because they have, two giant expiring contracts. I think there's a world where he winds up on the Knicks with Phil, and it's not that far-fetched. So I think the Lakers over with the caution that, this is a team that could blow it up, right? I think the next one was Memphis, I think under for everything. And I think for Memphis, the issue is that, I think with OKC slipping back, that might be an interesting thing to revisit. I do think that, they have some older players, they have some interesting depth. I think it's under, but it's not that much under, right? So it's 48.5, and, I can actually give you the specific odds for that. Right now I've got them, and again, I'm not done with my sim yet, but I've got them finishing under 59% of the time. So it's about right, the number that Vegas put up, or at least I think it's about right. I think the Heat, we talked at length about the South East. It's interesting that when I ran it, basically the model threw up its hand and says they're all about the same team. it likes the Hawks slightly better than everybody else, but it's like everybody's around 20-25% odds to win except for the Magic, right? So, you know, that's what we talked about for that division.
That is the end of part one of this two-part over-under podcast, and as I said at the beginning, both parts are released at the same time, so for those of you who have not listened, you can hop over to part two, which is Milwaukee and everybody else on down, and then we hit some other stuff like title odds and other things like that. You can read Arturo Galletti at boxscoregeeks.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Arturo Galletti. That's ArturoGalletti. And as always, if you have any feedback, you can send it to me on Twitter at Danny LaRue, DannyLeroux, or you can email it to me at daniel.leroux@realgm.com. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you listen to part two. Take care and make it a great day.